Hey, welcome to a new episode of Skin in the Game. This is your host, John Simperman, with my co-host,
Tim Elshai. You ready to talk some cycling today, John?
You know, we've talked golf, we've talked pickleball, flag football, obviously football in these parts, but I'm really excited to talk about cycling, participation trends, retail trends, and just kind of see what is the state of the industry. You know, we talk a lot, Tim, about lifetime sports, right? You know, we talked about golf and tennis and obviously now pickleball, but, you know, I don't think cycling gets enough credit for being one of those activities that you can do all your life.
You know, this is a question we can get into is, I don't know that everybody thinks of it as a sport. It certainly is a sport, but I don't know that everybody who knows how to do it, which I dare say is most of us, think of it as an athletic activity. It's a, you know, it's a way to get around. It's
right.
A way to have fun. And then there's a lot of people who look at it as an athletic activity. And
By the way, right? shout out to Slovenia. The winner of the Tour de France was Slovenian. You may or may not know, I am of Slovenian descent.
This is the best segue I've ever heard you do on this show, John.
So, pretty exciting for those Slovenians out there.
Yeah, congratulations to you. I know you had a lot to do with it.
Vicariously, I did. Yes, I did. Yes, I did. Speaking of cycling, though, on the news front, there's a little bit of a bike line debate in the fine city of Toronto, which most of our listeners may be aware of, but, you know, it may have been 10 years or so back, there was $20-some million invested in improving the bike lanes of Toronto. And now there's a big debate about removing those bike lanes, which is actually going to cost more money than actually installing the bike lanes.
Yeah, which is puzzling to me. You know, I mean, as we sit here, and I'm going to go back right before we started talking about Slovenia, and we're talking about people learning how to ride bikes often at a very young age. The incredible, you know, push behind using it as a way to not only get around and be, you know, eco-conscious and health-conscious. And, you know, you're talking Toronto. I was looking in New York where it's not quite a similar debate, but where there's a big crackdown on bikers in New York, too. And it's a not the same issue, but, you know, a lot of people are looking at this and saying, are we going too far? And right. I don't think we are, but.
Well, you know, we're going to bring this up to our panel here because we have some actual experts that'll give their viewpoints on bike lanes and reducing traffic congestion and looking for solutions to, you know, help with, you know, transportation, but also sustainability and making it work for everyone. So, you know, I think that's going to be a good topic we can dig into with our guests. So we do have a panel of guests with us today, all about cycling. We're going to be joined by Kevin Heffernan, who is the deputy director of Go Bike here in Buffalo, Chris Lonzi, the general manager of Tom's Pro Bike, and Pat Kelly, who's actually a producer here at Buffalo, Toronto Public Media, who's going to walk us through a statewide ride he is going to be undertaking here shortly. So I do hope everyone stays tuned to Skin in the Game. We'll be right back with our guests.
I'm excited to see, like, she said this, well, he said that.
The truth will come out.
Wondering what the buzz is? What's the hot goss? Whatever it is, we're talking about it on Group Chat, your weekly connection to the unpredictable, weird, and wonderful world of pop culture, from film, music, theater to food, blockbusters, and beyond, every week with Tiffany Bentley and her revolving panel of pop culture enthusiasts. Listen to Group Chat on Fridays at 10 a.m. and Saturdays at noon on BTPM NPR.
I'm very excited.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Skin in the Game. And we are going to talk cycling today. It's a topic, John, we are long overdue to get into. I'm excited that we're doing it. So we're happy to welcome Kevin Heffernan, the deputy director of Go Bike, Chris Lonzi, the general manager of Tom's Pro Bike, and Pat Kelly, who is a producer here at Buffalo Toronto Public Media, but has a great initiative that it's going to take him statewide, and we're going to get into it shortly. Kevin, let's start with you, though. Tell us a little bit about Go Bike.
Sure. I'm in my fourth year there. I do our communications and our advocacy work, as well as the other spreadsheet work that deputy director requires. But we've been around since just before 2010. when we started just fixing up broken bikes and donating them back out to folks. And, you know, when that volume really picked up, you'd see people getting their hands on their first bike or bike they very much needed, but didn't have much instruction. So they would go out and ride, you know, on the wrong side of the road. And we slowly developed an education department that partners with the state of New York and municipalities around here. It talks about riding on the right, as well as other things for drivers, walkers, cyclists, people in wheelchairs, transit users. Really took this ecosystem look of like, okay, if we've got people on good, sturdy bikes and they're well-educated, why are they still getting hit? These roads are terribly designed. So we now have a planning department with a professional traffic engineer and urban planners, and municipalities around the region give us the go-ahead to do temporary designs. So we'll take away a lane or a lane of parking and put in a two-way cycle track, have a bunch of data measuring tools. We hand that off to the municipality and they figure out what they're going to do permanently. Sometimes it's something like we wanted, sometimes it's not, but we're grateful to have the opportunity to let people try these things out.
So the education, it goes well beyond the people riding the bicycles in this case. You are educating everybody involved in this.
Yeah, yeah. We actually advocated Albany to include more questions on the DMV's permit exams that have to do with walking and biking. Because, you know, you don't have to renew your license nearly ever. So after you're done with driver's ed, you don't get these lessons anymore. So at least we can hammer them with a few more questions before they get that license. So yeah, drivers are such a big part of it. They're driving the 2,000 to 4,000 pound vehicles down the road and, you know, getting them to operate safely either through culture change, through enforcement, or better yet, through better design is how we're going to change culture around here and get more people walking and biking.
Now, Chris is a GM at Tom's Pro Bike, and I'm guessing what Kevin was just talking about here is still, it's different job, but got to be very relevant to you and the people you're working with and the consumers.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, that's a big concern of all riders is safety on the road. So that's super important that drivers are aware that riders are on the road and keeping everyone safe.
Now, Pat, we know you as a producer here at Buffalo Toronto Public Media, but tell us about Rolling Through.
Yeah, it's going to be a 20-part digital first series. We're going to leave from Buffalo and we're filming a bicycle travel show all the way down to Brooklyn over 10 or 11 days. And we're going to ride from segment to segment and look at what everybody across New York State's already doing to combat the climate crisis. Whether it's local businesses leaning into sustainability with, you know, wineries in the Finger Lakes or organizations that are teaching urban farming and sustainability like Radix in Albany. They go around with like cargo e-bikes to do compost and plant trees. And so, yeah, we're looking at, you know, cities, towns, and rural like country farmers and seeing what they're doing.
So the bicycles in this case aren't necessarily the story, but they're the vehicle for the storytelling. And but it seems like they play into
yeah,
the storyline.
Like for me, it's also like a celebration of the bicycle because I love it so much. I think it's like the perfect vehicle. It was built, you know, over 100 years ago and they really haven't changed the design. So to me, that's perfect. And so while it's a celebration of bikes and we're trying to get as many cyclists included, we're doing group rides when we go to cities and we're highlighting different organizations that work with bikes. Along the way, it's really about, you know, what are these organizations doing to help with like climate change? I would say cycling is like kind of the intersection of all these different areas where it's either, you know, business, sustainability, recreation, athletics, it all comes back to cycling.
So Pat, I'm running the math quickly through my head. This looks like maybe about 50 miles a day. Are you ready for this?
Yep. Yeah. I've started. I mean, I always train because I ride year round. But I started training heavily in about March once I was able to start really going outside. I'm not huge on like indoor, like Pelotons or like cycle, like indoor bikes. But yeah, since about March, I'm up to about like 150 miles a week now.
Yeah.
200,
great.
So
great. Great. Yeah. Well, that's a great segue because I want all three of you obviously have a passion for cycling. And I just want to kind of get a sense of maybe where that started. And Kevin, I'll start with you. What got you into, and what was the, you know, what drove the passion for cycling for you?
Sure. I grew up in West Seneca in the 90s, just suburb right outside of Buffalo, and my friends and I would ride all over the place. I live in Buffalo now in Elmwood Village, and I kind of go back to West Seneca. I was like, how did I ride here? Because the cars are twice the size, and everybody's on their phones now. So,
and just for our listeners, that's about 15, 16 miles, right? Back and forth between West Seneca and downtown Buffalo?
Oh, yeah. I'm not making that commute right now, though. But right. Yeah, that's about how far away it is.
Yeah.
And, you know, I went to Canisius University, not foolishly that, but foolishly, I didn't bring my my bike onto campus until my senior year. And I was like, what was I thinking? And that sort of reinvigorated me. So by 07, 08, I was riding all over the city again. After graduating, my dad and I would do two bikes a week out as far as we could before it got dark. And then we did the Sky Ride with Go Bike, the very first one in 2014. And then, you know, you start riding to work more often and you start seeing the problems come up. I had my own media company in the late 2010s, and we were kind of talking about the nonprofits that were doing work to try and improve Buffalo. And we talked to Go Bike all the time. So in 2021, I was working in the state assembly at the time, and I got a call from our executive director, Justin Booth, just wondering if I knew anyone who might want to apply for the communications director job. It's like, me, don't call anybody else. I want it. I want to work with this organization.
I got a recommendation for you. Yeah.
Yeah. And for better or worse, it has absolutely turned into an obsession. And again, not just cycling, but walkability too, or like looking at this curb, like how can anyone with a stroller or a wheelchair get over this? And now I have a 1-year-old son, and the worldview changed all over again of, well, that neighborhood I can go to and visit because we can actually move around. This one, it feels like, you know, we're going to get hit by a car. You know, right. The street design just isn't there for us. So many layers of viewing the city and its opportunities, I should say, as opposed to its problems. That's how it began for me. It was just joyrides.
Chris, you may have been forced to have a passion for cycling. Tom's Pro Bike is still an independent, family-owned business. Was it just around the breakfast table that you found the passion, or how did you keep the passion going to stay in the family business?
Well, so yeah, for me, it was easy. I was around bikes my whole life. My dad's owned a bike shop since the mid 80s before I was born. And then he started Tom's Pro Bike in 97. I probably started working there right around that time, just helping out, sweeping the floor, you know, doing odd jobs, and been doing it ever since. And now my son, who's 6, he comes in on Saturdays and he helps out. Breaks down boxes, rings customers up. So it really is a family business, and we all love it. And it's makes going to work easy when you want to be there.
Yeah, and just for our listeners, how many locations with Tom's Pro Bike, and where are they located?
So we have 3 locations, 2 in Buffalo, so 1 in Lancaster, 1 in Orchard Park, and then we have a location right outside of Rochester in Victor, New York.
Great. Now, Pat, it sounds like you've had this passion for a long time. It's going to be shown off in the next few weeks, but you know, where did you first find your love for cycling?
I grew up cycling and, you know, loved it just getting around town as a kid. Like, biking to school was always my favorite. I kind of fell off of cycling for a while when I got to college because I moved to New York City and I was like, oh, it's too scary to bike there and I'm not going to do that. And they also just had the transportation option, so I didn't like need to bike. But it wasn't until I moved to Brooklyn that to get across Brooklyn, it's impossible like by train because there's only a couple. So if you're going from one side to the other, either take an Uber or you go into Manhattan just to go back to Brooklyn. And I decided to bring my old bike. I was like, all right, there's some bike lanes, I'll try this. And once I started cycling there, I just got the bug and it took off. And I would go see friends, and then it got to a point where I'd commute to work by bike and then just go out for, you know, weekend rides. And then I was just living on my bike, basically.
And now you're going to commute from Buffalo to Manhattan.
Now I'm going to commute Buffalo to,
Yeah, Pat, I spend a good amount of time in New York City, and I just did exactly that, too. I was meeting a friend in Brooklyn. I was coming from Manhattan. I ended up walking a good way across Manhattan just to, you know, get on the right street to take me straight across the Williamsburg Bridge into Brooklyn. And, you know, there's a big part of me that thought, my God, if I was doing this around Brooklyn, I'd want a bike. Well, let me, and I brought this up to John at the top of the show, and I want to ask all of you this. Now, if you go to a big city like New York, and I imagine this is probably true in Toronto, in any large city where you have a lot of people cycling, anecdotally, I've seen more and more issues come up. I read about it. I've seen it. I feel like I've seen more cyclists and pedestrians crash into each other. And this is my question for you. Like, how are we doing in terms of setting the rules and the expectations for not only cyclists and drivers, but pedestrians? And I'm wondering if like the DoorDash and services like that have amplified the number of people that are traveling around on bikes. Kind of where are we at in terms of all being able to live and move together and do it safely?
So, as I mentioned, we do have education work that we do, outreach to schools, community centers. We train NFTA bus drivers on lawfully sharing the road. But, you know, it really comes down to design and enforcement. So there has been little enforcement, at least in Buffalo since 2020, of many traffic laws. And that sense of chaos, you know, when you see cars blowing red lights and blowing stop signs, you see cyclists be like, well, I'll do it too. You know, in a more sparsely populated city like ours, those collisions between cyclists and pedestrians aren't happening as much as you'd see them in a New York City where everybody's kind of fighting for space. The way I view New York City is they're just going through growing pains right now as this transition happens. So if you look back toward the transition when cars arrived, everyone hated them because they were mowing people down left and right. They were breaking all these rules and everybody wanted to get rid of them, but the auto industry sort of pushed it through. I think now that cycling is rising in popularity and you're seeing this advent of e-cyclists and those bikes cost a lot more, you know, you have this opportunity for that industry to say like, no, we're here to stay. You're not going to push us back. This is an entire economic boom here. And so with that being said, like, forget the idea of like, oh, this is just a fad for cycling. It's going to go away. We need to say, okay, how are we going to redesign our roads to accommodate this? So what GoBike advocates for is not enforcement first, it is design first. So we should be having protected cycle tracks, not on every road, but main thoroughfares. Imagine Niagara Falls Boulevard. It's nicknamed the Boulevard of Death, and they haven't redesigned it. Like, what kind of governance is that to know that people get killed on it all the time and to say, well, oh, well, you know, you could narrow that. You could put a protected cycle track in. You could lessen the car traffic. You do the same thing on Sheridan. They will be doing it on Main Street if they ever get that going here in the city. Niagara Street cycle track was 6 drive lanes, and every building was abandoned on that street. It was awful. Now it is a one way in each direction, a turn lane and a cycle track and parking on both sides, and the buildings are coming up. So when we talk about the business of cycling, we put in that cycling track and now suddenly the lights are on everywhere. The trees are growing. That is an awesome street and people want to go to it. So it's not just that we're trying to accommodate the, we call them mammals, middle-aged men in Lycra. Those people play a role here too, but there are people who commute daily. There are people who choose to, and there's people who must on their bike. And you give them that safe place to go, more and more people do. Niagara Street Cycle Track is something where kids can ride, their parents can confidently get them on there, and where older adults can ride too. When you just put a shoulder lane on, you really only are inviting the people with the highest confidence levels to get on there. Many people still think, like, that's not enough protection for me, I won't do it. I'll hop on the sidewalk. And then we collide with people walking. So, you know, design first, enforcement second, culture change happens after that.
Is this reflective of what, you know, as you talk to your, you know, people in similar positions around the region, around the country, is this similar to what's happening in other mid-sized cities? I get that New York is its own thing, right? But if we set aside mega cities like New York and just look at cities like Buffalo or Cleveland or Pittsburgh or Detroit, or, you know, pick your midsize or, you know, smaller major league city around the country.
I'll pick Pittsburgh.
Go for it. Yeah. Lots of hills there, but
and that's what's wild, right? Yeah. We are a flat city here and with incredible inland ocean views. And yet Pittsburgh, with all its steep hills, has a much better cycling culture than we do currently. Bike PGH is an organization there that does really great work. Like, if you're looking to join this effort, not only should you subscribe to GoBike's emails that I write, but subscribe to Pittsburgh's too. Because the way they talk about it and the kind of events they get going and the way people participate, they drive that change of better design, better enforcement, because they're sort of leading with strong culture right off the bat. So I see them doing it, and they remove those excuses. You know, it snows in Pittsburgh. They have hills in Pittsburgh. And right, when we try to do something, like, well, it snows here. I was just saying to Chris in the lobby, like, my winter's my favorite time to ride in because then I'm not showing up as sweaty as I am today. So other mid-sized cities are doing it. I don't see the conflicts that we're talking about in New York City as much. Because New York City is an enigma. I don't think we can point to it and say, like, see, it worked there. It can work in Buffalo, too. It's just, it is exponentially the size of our city.
Right.
With so many different modes. So it's hard to compare those apples and oranges.
Yeah, the city that I spend quite a bit of time in, I really applaud them for their well-marked lanes, is Denver. I mean, you can go all through the city. You can ride out 16 miles to Golden, Colorado, and everything is marked. But to your point, Kevin, I just think it's kind of maybe the outdoor, comfortable, the demographic of Colorado, that they're much more permissive of cycling. It's just part of their culture.
Minneapolis, too.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Number one cycling city in the nation is in a cold weather city.
Right.
But yeah, because people are like, I'm here because I like being outdoors and active. And, you know, we're Buffalo. We supposedly embrace our snow. It's great to get through the winter if you get out into it. But when you say you want to embrace that weather on a bike, you get some pushback.
No, there's nothing like a fat tire bike going through the woods on a winter day. Just kind of segueing this over, Chris, what have you seen business-wise? You know, we're going to touch on COVID because it seemed like early on COVID was good for business, but then maybe not so much towards the end of COVID. So what's the state of, and I'm going to focus on your business, the independent bike shop.
So kind of right when COVID hit, there was a lot of uncertainty whether we could even stay open. We were able to stay open and got a lot of people that hadn't ridden before out on bikes. You know, gyms were closed, so it gave them something to do. So I would say for the first 2 years, if you were a larger independent bicycle retailer, you did great. We still got product flowing in, and there was a really high demand for it. It did hurt a lot of the smaller shops. The access to the inventory wasn't there, and the suppliers kind of focused it on their bigger dealers. So that was tough for a lot of the smaller shops. But what kind of happened since then is the suppliers overbought. Inventory levels have been super high for the last year or two, I would say, which leads to them basically giving bikes away. That's definitely been a struggle, something we're still kind of dealing with. And it's really mixed. Some segments of the market are, the bikes are readily available, really easy to get and heavily discounted. Other bikes, they're impossible to get, and we might get one or two for the year, and that's it. So it's been a challenge, but there's ups and downs with it. And, you know, the shops that were strong enough kind of made it through.
What do you do to push through that? I mean, are you trying to put it in very broad business terms, I mean, get new consumers, recruit people back to start riding their bikes? Again, assuming they did it as little kids, are you really focusing in on the cyclists who are, you know, out there and serious and maybe want to upgrade or, you know, need maintenance for their equipment? Is it something else?
So our business kind of covers a range. You know, we try to get a lot of those people that right at the start of COVID got into cycling. You know, ideally they stick with it and keep going. That's not going to be the case for everyone, but we find that our best way to get people on bikes is our store hosts a lot of events. Any way that you can get the community into your shop, a lot of our events, they don't even happen at the store. Big group rides, we just had our big ride last month, and we had 115 people, a couple different routes, and free cookout afterwards. And that's, to me, the best way to get people on bikes is to give them a safe space to do it with a group of people, and just makes it more fun for everyone.
Can you monetize those in a significant way, or is that more like keeping and maintaining a customer base?
Really just keeping and maintaining. You know, all of our events are free, so we don't charge for them. We just want to get people out.
Pat, just your gut feeling, let's say if someone's out there, they bought a bike, they bought it, let's say 5 years ago, 4 years ago during COVID, when they couldn't do much else, they were out there using it. Time has slipped by, the world has reopened, they're busy. That bike's collecting dust in the garage right now. How would you sell that person on getting back out on the bike?
I would sell them from the social aspect. I think there's a big barrier to people getting on bikes is the athletic part, where they're like, oh, well, if I'm going to go out, I'm going to have to go and bike like 40 miles. I'm going to have to go and do that. Like, no, you can just hop on, especially if you have access to good trails or bike lanes in an area that has a lot of like commercial potential, where you can go to a bar, you can go to a restaurant. All you have to do is hop on your bike and go down the street for a beer or a burger, and you can meet friends. To me, that's the best way to bike, is take it slow and meet up with friends and just treat it like part of your commute, where you don't have to worry about parking. You get to see your street. When you get in that car and you get in that box, I feel like you're like limited. Like, and I drive a lot, but you do kind of limit your senses in a way where you're focused on the road, or you should be. Not everyone is. But when you're on a bike, what's nice is there's a sensory experience if you're going slow, that you, there's a million smells like all around, like whether it's flowers or plants or something. Somebody's cooking, has their window open. You can interact with your neighbors more easily because you just wave to them and say hi as you go by. And it can be very pleasant and just a very low stakes way to travel and yeah, just get out there. And
I like what Chris said too, the communal part of it and, you know, getting a group together, and there's a lot of group rides. I know Go Bike hosts a number of group rides, other restaurants, bars in the region. And also I think through Go Bike, some of these establishments can get a bike rack installed in front of their venue, right?
Yeah, yeah. We work with plenty of them for that. And I always say that when you walk up to, you know, a restaurant, a store, and you see bikes parked out front, you know there's a good time happening inside because those cyclists are happy. And just to hop on what Pat's saying, there's also the spontaneity of cycling. Because I remember the other day we went into downtown for lunch. Our second community workshop is on Broadway, not far from downtown. And out of the corner of my eye, I spotted the farmer's market happening on Main Street and was able to turn right to it, pull right up to what I needed to get and go. And if I was in the car, I'd be like, ah, there's no parking. Like, forget it. I'm not going to do that. Big reason that they say when you make your city more bike friendly, it helps out the retail adjacent is because of that spontaneity. Cyclists tend to make more stops, people walking as well along their way when they see their local shops, their local coffee shop, or pick something up at a grocery store, things like that, than cars do. When we talk about revitalizing downtown Buffalo, big part of that has to be making it more easy to walk and bike and have more people do that. Because when you're down there and you don't see anybody, not only does it feel dead, it feels unsafe. You know, if people are just going to go from their office to their car and drive out of that city as fast as they can, they're not supporting anything down there and they're not really contributing to reviving downtown, whereas cyclists and people who walk do. So yeah, it helps out businesses to put that bike rack out front and to make that infrastructure safe that anybody could ride it.
Right. That's great. We're going to take a quick break here on Skin in the Game. We're joined by Kevin Heffernan, Deputy Director of Go Bike, Chris Lonzi, the General Manager of Tom's Bro Bike, and Pat Kelly, the producer here at BTPM, as well as he'll be on the road rolling through a city in New York soon. We'll be right back.
Corey here with the Compact Civics Expansion Pack.
America is such a big, wide, awesome place, and to be able to see things that are representative of so many different places, it can be so important when brought to your tiny town.
Everybody is so kind and loving. I'm here in Buffalo just because of Stage Buffalo.
From urban farms to rural fairs, we'll celebrate spaces that bring us together and create community.
Watch on the Buffalo Toronto Public Media YouTube channel.
From your morning commute to quiet evenings at home, Buffalo Toronto Public Media is always there with trusted news, inspiring stories, and timeless music. It's your connection to a world of wonder. This is Public Media.
We're back on Skin in the Game. Kevin, Chris, and Pat, I'm going to ask any or all of you to jump in on this next one. And, you know, Pat, you got me thinking here as you were, you know, when I asked you, like, how would you sell somebody on the idea of getting back out on their bike? And I think we all can imagine the physical health benefits of getting out and riding more. But I'm going beyond that and thinking about people's wellness, their mental health. And you guys are kind of hitting at it, the sense of community, the spontaneity that can come from this. But take me a little deeper on that. How is biking good for you? What would the pitch be there?
I would go mental health just for the meditative aspect, because sometimes I'll ride with like one earbud in and just listen to music, which is nice if I'm on like a bike trail and can kind of just vibe and not like tune out. But if I'm just out in the country, like go out for a country ride, just no music. It's just the sounds of nature, maybe the wind like going by. You know, you could be out for like 3-4 hours where you're just alone with your thoughts. And that's not something we get very often now because we're always inundated with the next thing, whether it's our phone, our television, or radio in the car, or, you know, whatever we're doing. We don't have many opportunities for meditative tasks. So when you're on a bike, you have one simple motion. You're just pushing your pedals and you're moving forward. You just focus on what's in front of you. And yeah, you just kind of let your mind wander. There's a really nice meditative quality to it that is, you can't really get anywhere else.
So we got 3 points there. One, I would recommend the shock style earbuds. So you wrap around and they leave your ear wide open so that you can hear those cars coming up behind you.
It's next on my list. Yep. It's, yeah, I just discovered them.
I used to ride with music and now I switch to podcasts and find that meditation pretty solid. The second element is there's data that says those who ride the bus or train, walk or bike to work are far more productive at their workplace than those who drive because they've gotten their physical health up and going and they're very alert navigating the roadway systems and things like that. So they show up to work ready to go. So companies that make it easier for their employees to walk, bike in, you know, they give out lockers, they install showers. We counsel businesses on those tweaks that they can make to be more accommodating of those kind of commutes. And the third thing, when you're really talking about mental health, University of Buffalo put out 2 studies last year that said the pollution levels in the city of Buffalo are so high that it's causing a public health crisis about people's mental health and that we do not currently have the mental health care capacity to deal with it. So to take on the environmental wing of our work, the more people who bike and don't drive, the more we're helping to solve this issue of pollution causing serious mental health problems in our city. There's many aspects to biking and improving that mental health.
Chris, when you get somebody who's, you know, well into adulthood, and what I mean by well into adulthood is late 20s, early 30s on, they, you know, bike riding as a kid, if they did it at all, is far in the past. What do you tend to hear from people about why they're finally getting on a bike again?
The answer I hear the most would be just the exercise. They want to get outside. They want to do something. We hear of a lot of people that they were runners and they can still run, but maybe it's not the most comfortable thing to do. So we get a lot of that. And I'd say between with people that age, mountain biking is probably the biggest growth area we see. Mountain biking specifically is community oriented. There's generally a party afterwards. And I think for them that that's a good way to kind of get into it. And then they can grow as a cyclist from there.
Do you guys find that people look at cycling as a sport? Now, I know competitive cyclists do, but most people probably know how to ride a bike. They learned at some point. Do they actually look at it as an athletic activity?
I think that a lot of the people that have done it do, but for sure, there's a big segment of the population that doesn't. They rode as kids and then they never touched a bike again after that.
But I know to Chris's point, you know, especially there is a big mountain biking community here in Western New York and Southern Ontario. I think we here are blessed with some of the best single track around. And probably once every week, there is a competitive ride, be it at Sprague Brook or Hunter's Creek or somewhere else. I've seen a big growth there too. And then, Kevin, back to your point, a more recent phenomenon that came out of Minneapolis was the Fat Tire Bike, which has now opened up mountain biking to 12 months here. So I see that hopefully as a trend that's going to continue.
Yeah, I think for sure. There's been years where the conditions are right, and we've had group rides in the winter with 20, 30 people once a week. And, you know, that was kind of unheard of before fat bikes came about. Even for use in the summer, it makes it the barrier to entry in mountain biking a lot lower because you can kind of roll over a lot of the obstacles, and really anyone can do it.
Right, right. So I do want to, speaking of new technology and new bikes, I kind of want to segue a little bit to e-bike/e-assist. You know, I've seen recently, Kevin, I know you commented on it editorial, I think, in the last few weeks, there has been some pushback in some communities on e-bikes. Chris, I'm going to start with you. There is a difference between an e-bike and an e-assist bike, right?
Yeah, for sure. With the rise in popularity of e-bikes, there's a ton of companies making them. The bikes that are made by bike manufacturers are generally e-assist only. They're limited to certain speeds, but we see every day in the shop, someone bought a kit on Amazon, they put it on their regular bike, and that bike might do 45 miles an hour.
Right.
Which I wouldn't consider that an e-bike.
Right.
But the bikes that are made by manufacturers that are e-assist, I think are really great for getting people out riding.
Well, on that note, what have you seen? Who is that typical legal e-bike consumer? Are they getting into the sport again for the first time, or are they just looking to add longevity to their cycling career?
Yeah, so it's a wide range. You get a lot of people that maybe have been riders for years and either felt like they couldn't keep up with the people they used to ride with, or they just felt like it wasn't enjoyable for them. So to get that little bit of assist gets them back on a bike, and that's been super helpful for them. Also, we get a lot of people that just have never ridden a bike. the physical aspect of it seemed too hard. But now with a little bit of assist, they're out riding and maybe they start at 2 or 3 miles at a time and they work their way up to riding 20 or 30 miles.
Mm-hmm.
So it's definitely a wide range. And yeah, it's been really great for a lot of people.
Now, Kevin, this is going to be a nice segue to you because there are now people getting back into cycling because of the e-bike and they probably need, as well as obviously the automobile drivers, a re-education on some of the rules of the road.
Yeah, so we also sell new e-bikes out of our Broadway shop, and we've seen, you know, folks in their 50s and 60s being the ones who want to come in. Partnered with Share Mobility Inc., they run the Ready Bike Share around the city in Tonawanda and Niagara Falls, and there's an e-bike rebate program where they can get a significant discount through them, and they cannot obtain that bike until they take an e-bike safety course with us, which is trying to do that responsibly. Like before you get out here and you can push that throttle and really get moving, you need to understand, one, the rules of the road, two, dear God, stop riding them without a helmet on. Like they are hitting insane speeds and people are riding without a helmet. And I'm just cringing when I see it. And, you know, otherwise other safety things like, you know, I wiped out on one of these because our shop would get the free samples sent and we'd ride them to lunch and things like that. And I hit the train tracks on Maine and there was some slush in them and the back tire was propelling and I just got slammed and cracked my helmet. So sometimes there's even the call to wear something that's more akin to a motorcycle helmet. And now when we're talking about e-bikes and things like that, you get into this very tricky territory of should these be regulated in any way, shape, or form. And our default at GoBike is we have to stand firm that these are opening up accessibility for more people than ever before. They are more sustainable to get around than a car. They're more affordable to get around in a car. And as soon as you start regulating them, those people that benefited from that accessibility and that affordability are now shut out all over again. But if you're going to do 30 miles an hour down the road, it should be considered a motorcycle. Honestly, I had an 86 Honda Spree. You know, like it's 100 miles to the gallon. And because I'm 205 pounds, it maxes out about 28 miles an hour. I have to have a license, title, and insurance for that thing because right. It runs on gas. And now these e-bikes can just go flying. And our default at GoBike is to defend the cyclists anytime there's a headline. Because oftentimes a crash makes the news and there is zero explanation of what happened. But when it says e-bike in the headline, God, the comments come through. And like, those cyclists, blah, 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 blah. And they rush to just pounce on the victim. The person who is either injured or killed is always at fault. And GoBike would step in and say, would you please wait? Would you take a look at this? And the more e-bikes we see and these teenagers who are underage flying around, it's getting harder and harder to defend.
Mm-hmm.
And they're sort of setting this movement back. So we're in a very tricky spot in cycling advocacy with this explosion of not just e-bikes, but bad behavior. So we've seen Clarence, which, again, for your Canadian listeners, that's a little bit further out. It's a second or third ring suburb of Buffalo where, you know, e-bikes are flying up the Clarence bike path. A lot of people love to use, and they're breaking the rules of not giving a ding as a warning. They're just flying by. And then we see it in East Aurora as well. We're going to put harsher penalties on these underage teenagers whose parents are letting them do this. And some of these things, it's like, yeah, there's a reason you shouldn't be on that e-bike as a teenager. Your body is too small to hit those speeds. And your brain's not developed to a point where you're going to use it perfectly. But punishment can't be the only policy we have. And what we've been saying at GoBike is, fine, you want to tackle this problem, you have also got to address these terrible drivers. Because yes, e-bikes are involved in crashes. They are not always at fault. The drivers are. So to see the town leadership and the sheriff, arm in arm, we're going to take on these e-bikes. And we pointed out in Clarence, you know, what about those 4,000 crashes with cars and the actually killed people? It's crickets. So we're pissed off about that. Honestly, it's infuriating that immediate action can come from town leadership and law enforcement because people are annoyed by e-bikes. And we have been clamoring for years to do something about this reckless driving and these poor road designs. And then they're quiet. So I'll stop there. I could go on.
I'm going to keep you going for, if you don't mind. What's the core of the problem? I'm sitting here listening to you describe this and we can hear the passion. I don't get why people would be that against cyclists, e-bikers, but it feels like they are. And you can tell me if I'm overreading that. I'm just wondering, you know, why are they the target? Why not get angry at bad drivers? That, I mean, we all we all know bad drivers, and it's pretty easy to get angry at them. It feels like there's a disconnect here in terms of where people are targeting.
Yeah, I have a target through GoBike, and it's been on media, and it's been in our emails and our social media, and that's the town of Tonawanda, where two children were killed last year, and there were zero changes. Where the one boy was killed, a stop sign was finally put in after residents have been asking for it for years, when his high school friend, a child, begged the town board to at least put a stop sign in. That didn't change the oversized roads. It didn't lower the speed limit. It just put one stop sign in. Child had to beg for it. What we talk about a lot is windshield bias. So, you know, at GoBike, we are not out to eradicate cars. We are out to eradicate awful driving and awful road design that contributes to traffic violence. And we want to proliferate the options you have when you decide to leave your car behind for the day or for good. Many people cannot afford a car. It costs $12,500 a year to own and maintain a car. So we're speaking for everyone who, you know, wants those options. And windshield bias is a very real thing. So what we ask people are these questions. If you're standing outside an elementary school and you see someone smoking a cigarette right outside the door, how many in this room would say, hey, put that out, you're at a school? You know, all of us, right? But at pickup time, when there's 45 cars in the line and all their engines are running, creating this toxic pollution right outside the school, who's knocking on windows and saying, shut your engine off? Almost none of us, because we're like, oh, geez, you know, they're entitled to that, when they're not. And we've kind of built that in. And the other thing we say is, you know, if I told you there is nothing we can do about all the children being killed by diseases in this country, there's nothing we can do, everyone here would say, well, that's bull. Sure. You know, of course there's things we can do. Let's get to work right now and let's save these kids' lives. But when we say there's nothing you can do about these kids getting hit and killed by cars, a lot of people are like, yeah, you know, it's a lot easier to blame that kid. And that's what Tonawanda did immediately for both kids. Instead of reexamining the width of their roads, the fact that they tolerate speeding down residential streets and things like that. So, you know, that windshield bias, we can't change it in a day, but we do need people to start thinking a little bit differently about it. When they get out on a bike, when they walk a little bit more, when they remember that everybody walks. You go downtown for an event, you were walking at some point from where you park to where you're going, and you have a little bit more empathy for the people you're seeing, whether that's them walking through the crosswalk or they're riding on the shoulder. You get one bike ride in, you get that near miss. The next time you see a cyclist and you're driving, you're giving them that 10 feet. Or you're slowing down and realizing that it'll take 10 seconds until a car going the other way leaves and you can pass with some distance. I think once you get behind that wheel, your empathy disappears and your patience disappears. And we really need to reexamine that. And we're looking at a potential new era in the city of Buffalo next year with, regardless, there will be a new mayor one way or another. So we could see that culture change happen here. It's yet to be seen.
Yeah. And Tim, kind of also back to your question about the e-bike perception, and I'll throw this out to Chris and Pat as well. I think there's a small minority who, well, quite frankly to me, if you're not pedaling, it's not an e-bike. Right. You got to at least be pedaling, right? Yeah. There's a few, and I hate to say it, they do skew a little younger, who don't know the rules of the road, and they're driving on the sidewalks, and they're driving through the light. And it's really more of a small motorcycle than it is an e-bike. You know, I'm not sure, Chris, on your side is when, you know, if you're seeing youth also buying these bikes, and if so, are they getting some training, or, you know, how can we make them more responsible when they get this small machine?
Right. So I think a lot of the younger people that are buying them, they're doing so online, so there's little to no training at all. All of our e-bikes are for adults. There's companies that make kids e-bikes. We don't bring any of those in. You know, we do what we can as far as walking someone through how to operate the bike safely. Obviously, always recommend wearing a helmet, but they need to be following the same rules of the road as everyone else. You know, I see cyclists all the time. They run a red light because no one's coming. They run a stop sign, and that just gives everyone else a bad name. So everyone really just needs to be following the rules of the road. It would be safer for everyone out there.
Right. And Pat, I'm assuming you are not doing your ride on an e-assist bike.
I am not. I'm riding a regular old bicycle, but we actually do have an e-bike going with us. My friend Greg, he's a videographer and cinematographer. He's going to be the director of photography, and he's going to be riding an e-bike that'll be loaded up with a bunch of gear and camera equipment.
That's fair, then. That's fair. That's a good use.
I didn't want to put him.
Batteries.
It's actually my e-bike that I had when I lived in New York, because I was commuting like 15 miles one way to And when I biked in the winter, I was getting too sweaty from biking like 15 miles. So I bought this like beefed up e-bike, and it's got an extended range battery that does like 50 miles. So we should be good on our like average daily pace for riding. And then we figured at certain segments we can stop and charge the battery up. And yeah.
And I wanted to ask you this anyhow. Yeah. How do you prepare for a journey like you're going to take?
So I did the journey in 2021 when they finished the Empire State Trail, and because I had been following the like them building it out, and there was like a couple sections left, and I think the Ralph Wilson Foundation like put up a bunch of money to help finish it, and you know, so shout out them, they're great. So when they completed the trail, that was like, I always pick one big cycling effort every year where I'm like, okay, I'm gonna bike Cadillac Mountain in Maine. I'm gonna do
this. That's a pretty big one.
It was great. Yeah. I definitely messed up and biked the park in reverse and had to double back and added mileage, but that's another story. But my big cycling effort in 2021 was the Empire State Trail, because I had been doing some bike touring on just like weekend trips where I would bike, you know, maybe to Long Island or just north of the city. And I decided to do the trail, and really I was just using my commuting miles to train for it. And it took me 9 days to do it. So we figured we would add 2 days for a relaxed pace for the TV or for like a digital show. So I've been training, I do about like 10 miles a day. And on the weekends I do like 30, 40 miles on like a Saturday, Sunday.
How big a crew do you have going?
It'll be me and Greg. So Greg's my cinematographer, and then I'll also be shooting extra footage. We are getting production support from member stations across the state. So WXXI, WCNY, and WMHT, they're going to send a videographer when we're in their region, which is really great. And we'll also have an associate producer in like a follow car that'll meet us from like segment to segment, and just in case something catastrophic happens, they'll have a first aid kit and can get to us if there's an emergency.
And maybe some snacks too.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Some energy gels, hopefully. So.
Pat, people listening to this, I think, will want to know, well, when can I watch Rolling Through? So do you know the rollout plan yet?
Yeah, we do. We're going to be in production at the end of August, and we'll be in the field for just under 2 weeks. And then we go right into post-production through September and October, and we're going to start rolling episodes out, no pun intended, at the end of October. And yeah.
Super exciting, super exciting. Hey, as we wrap this up, I also want to, Chris from Tom's Pro Bike, you know, what should our listeners look for from Tom's Pro Bike over the next 3-4 months?
We'll have a few more events coming up, a couple rides, all that stuff will be on our website. We're just supporting some of the other local rides that are coming up. There's a few fundraising and charity rides left, so just get out and get on a bike.
And it's always, you know, from what I've heard, and you're in the business, but is it the end of the bike season a good time to buy a bike?
It is for sure. And we're hopeful that with the slow start of the spring here, that the summer will be extended a little bit. So there's still a lot of time left.
That's great. That's great.
There's no end of the season.
That's right. We just talked about the fat tires. That's right. 12 months a year. Kevin, from a go bike perspective, what are your shortest term priorities and goals for over the next, you know, 6 to 12 months?
Well, with a potential new administration, we need to reexamine the Buffalo and the regional bike master plan. Right now, those things only come into play when a road that is designated and committed, adopted by the region and adopted by the city, have said like that's going to be some sort of bike facility there. Only when the road has turned to such garbage that it needs to be repaved is that idea reexamined. So we'd love to push forward and get that to start happening before then. We were successful with the City of Buffalo, got a striping budget of almost $1 million a year so that you don't have to wait to restripe until the road falls apart again. That was actually a big plan, but shortest term is, you know, federal dollars are drying up, which means state dollars will dry up. I mean, we need to reexamine how we can get things done and continue to maintain our team. I would just leave it with, you know, more than ever, we need strong communities in Western New York and everywhere. And you don't get those on a keyboard and you don't get them behind a windshield. Strong communities are full of people who know each other. They go out of their way to support locally owned businesses. And they talk when they're walking, they talk when they're biking. And that's the kind of community that we envision and want to see happen.
That's great. That's great. Well, Tim, any other questions for our illustrious panel?
I have
here?
One. I'm going to squeeze one last one in for each of you, the same one for each of you. think outside where we are sitting. We're sitting here in Western New York. We're sitting here in downtown Buffalo. Whether it's Southern Ontario, another part of New York State, or another state, give us one recommendation of a great biking community where people can, you know, put the bike on the car and go enjoy another community.
Pat's going to be able to report back in a couple of months.
Yeah, Pat, you can get back to us on it.
Chris, how about you go first? What if you're looking for a day getaway, put the bikes on the rack and spend a few hours on some trails.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you're looking to ride off-road, you don't have to go very far at all. Rochester is, they have some of the best mountain biking around. There's five or six different trail systems. They're super accessible. A lot of them are connected, and you can really ride a lot of different kinds of terrain. You can even take it up along Lake Ontario. Really, really good stuff out there.
Kevin?
Fort Erie's food scene is kind of rising up, so it's so easy to ride over the Peace Bridge. Canadians let you use the Nexus Lane. Getting back to the U.S., it's not as easy. They kind of make you wait down below, but Canada's like, you rode in? Welcome. Here's the red carpet.
Awesome. Wait, I have a technical question. So if you don't have a Nexus card, you can still go through the Nexus Lane if you're on a bike?
With your passport, yeah.
That might be the best reason ever to get on a bike and go to Canada.
Yeah, so you can enjoy Fort Erie as we do. We go to this restaurant, Ming Tay, right across the border. And then you can shoot right up to Niagara Falls on a really great trail system up there.
Yeah, well, speaking of Canada, my favorite afternoon ride is the same way, but heading along the escarpment at Niagara-on-the-Lake. And I think between the Peace Bridge and Niagara-on-the-Lake, I think there's 7 wineries, all with bike racks. So that's a nice way to spend the day. And then spend the night, too.
Yeah. How many wineries can you hit while still riding the bike?
Well, that's why you spend the night.
I was also going to say Rochester, and also it's my home city, but it has great mountain biking. Also, the canal towns are just great because you can hop on the canal trail and go to Fairport, Pittsford, Spencerport, and just stop off in any one of those little canal towns and just have a nice meal, have a couple drinks, and take in the views. It can be a great afternoon.
Because as you pointed out, there's still hopefully plenty of summer left. And Kevin, no end of the season, so you could do it any time of year.
That's right.
Well, listen, guys, we really, really appreciate you joining us. I am going to go get back on the bike. This has definitely inspired me to do it more. I've done it, but to do it more, and to do it in the cold too. And also, by the way, Pittsburgh, is it worth going to Pittsburgh to bike? Are you?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, that's on my list of favorite cities, so I'm going to hit that one.
Hey guys, thanks for joining us, and I hope that for all of our listeners as well, it was just as enlightening, and I think our word to everyone would be, go bike. This is a production of Buffalo Toronto Public Media. Thanks for listening.